got toxic. All right, man, let's go. Break it. Break it, Glenn Ross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN.
What's happening? Welcome in. Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 1017 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert. Derek Johnson is back in studio. My main man, David Lawrence, is sitting to the right of me. We are live at Lawrence Country Club, the site of the Family Promise of Lawrence Golf Tournament. We will be here for the next 3 hours. We've got a very busy show. It was a busy weekend in the world of sports, both around the country and, of course, locally. And, David, if I've said it once, I've said it again. It takes a very special occasion for us to bring on a guest at the very top of the show. But one of the reasons why you do that is if you go and you beat one of the top high school football programs in the state of Missouri, and that's what Free State Football did on Friday.
No question about it. Saving face for the entire state of Kansas and putting one on the state of Missouri. He joins us now, certainly worthy of the top 2%, Bob Lischer. Coach, congratulations.
Well, I appreciate it, David. That was a lot of fun, a lot of excitement.
Well, kind of go through the scouting report. How did you feel about the matchup going in? And then how well did your kids execute the game plan?
Well, I thought game plan-wise, I thought the kids did an outstanding job. Obviously, they had to. Park Hill has a lot of speed all over the field on both sides of the football. And defensively, we knew we had to slow down the pass, and we had to play the run with five inside guys, which isn't the best thing in the world to do, but our inside guys are pretty good, and they slowed down the run enough with those that we could concentrate on the pass and take a lot of that away and keep the ball out of the speedy guys' hands, which we did for the most part. And then offensively, we came out and tried to control the ball a little bit, slow down the pace of the game, burn up a little bit of clock, and we executed that pretty well and came out and scored a few times to get up and get some momentum. So it kind of played out from there.
Coach, you guys have been recognized all year long for your outstanding defense. I think we kind of knew what to expect defensively, although it was certainly their biggest test of the season so far. But you talk about that offense. Jordan Preston making just his second start at quarterback. You guys go and score touchdowns on the first two drives of the game. It seemed like you guys really came out and set a tone early on.
Yeah, we were clicking early. We even made some plays that weren't designed to be made on our first drive. A couple of plays broke down, and Jordan got the ball to another guy that wasn't planned on. We made some yards off of it and continued on. We were making some plays, even the ones that weren't designed to run like that worked. And when you have some success like that and you execute your plays, and even the ones that you don't execute, you make yards on that. That was special, and that kind of got us going and started to believe a little bit offensively. And we stumbled a little bit after those first two drives, there's no doubt about it, but Park Hill's pretty good in that regard as well. But, you know, we had some opportunities to, right before halftime, we punched it in the two-minute drill and scored, and then had another chance in the third quarter on a double pass that we didn't quite execute and finish that one. But it could have been 28-2, and then maybe not so much energy have to be expelled at the end of the game, and we weren't be so tied up and anxiety stricken there at the end, but our kids came up and made some big plays on defense at the end of the game to seal it.
Well, you guys are certainly going to earn a lot of respect around the state with that win over Park Hill, but I heard that the rumor mill is saying that that win also earns you a new hairstyle. Is this correct?
It did. It's a little different for me, anyway, but my wife kind of liked it, said it made me look 20 years younger. She wasn't too hot on the lightning bolts that I got shaved into the side of my head, but there was a little. I've given some of our kids a hard time about their hair, joking around. They said, "Coach, we win, you got to do this." I said, "All right, we win, I'm doing it," and I did it. So here we go. I got a jet black hairdo now. There's no gray in it whatsoever, and there's some lightning bolts on the side, so I feel like one of the kids.
the matchup with the state of Missouri. Kansas goes 0-11 last year. This year they don't win a lot, but the fact that you beat the team in Kansas City, the team in the state of Missouri, how many Kansas coaches have you heard from via text or phone calls congratulating you about that big win?
Well, there was a lot of them, David. We're a pretty tight brotherhood, and for the most part, I heard from everybody in the Sunflower League and pretty much everybody in the Eastern Kansas League and some of the surrounding areas, even some of the smaller schools and so forth, that were sending congratulatory notes and text messages. It was it made it pretty special that have that many coaches text and congratulate you and call you. So it was good.
Without question, the biggest win in the state of Kansas this season. Now, the only downside of that, I can think of two. It didn't help you in the league race, and you're going to be the perennial favorites from now until Christmas. So how do you deal with that going forward?
Well, again, we put that one to bed Saturday morning after we watched the film on it here with the guys, and we started talking about Shawnee Mission Northwest and what we have to do this week. It's homecoming week. There's some distractions, and there's a good chance that there's a letdown from this week's game, but we're going to work hard to not let that happen and get our guys understanding the fact that they got a little bullseye on their back now, and they've got to come out and perform each and every week because we're going to get everybody's best shot.
Now, knowing that with the way that the playoff format and the seeding works, a lot of teams around the state didn't have to go and play the likes of these Missouri schools that you guys did in the Sunflower League. So in the years past, maybe that works against you, but now all of a sudden you've got a huge statement win and you get a leg up on everybody else in the Sunflower League. So, like, can you put into perspective just how big that win is instrumental as far as when you're looking ahead towards the playoffs and where you guys could be headed?
Well, right now, each and every game is important because of the way that the district pairings are set up. And if you look at our district right now, we are the third seed as of right now. We're like 8 points behind Topeka High, who is also 3-0, and then you get the 13-point tiebreaker after each game. So we didn't win by 13. Now we're the number three seed as of right now in the West. But that's better than being down at the 10th or 11th seed where we kind of started last year and tried to work our way up. So we feel pretty good about where we're at now. We got to continue to try to win each and every game and try to win each and every game by 13 points.
Jake Rittman, I had this young man when he was a freshman. He was kind of pulled himself off as a baseball player at that time. He's a big-time receiver now, 9 catches, 82 yards. Talk about the development of this young man.
Well, Jake's got outstanding hands, and he had to make some acrobatic catches Friday night, and he did. He made a lot of catches that weren't easy. Made some yards after the catch, but the thing about it is he's very versatile. Not only is he a great receiver, he kicks the ball in the end zone most of the time on touchbacks, and he punts for us. He and Cameron Lake, now that Cameron's getting healthy again, have been splitting the PAT and field goal opportunities. So he's just an all-around good player. And he is a great baseball player as well, started for the baseball team last year, but he's really doing a good job for us.
Coach, you said you kind of tried to put it to bed on Saturday morning and get ready for the rest of the season, but after such a convincing win against a really good program, how do you kind of motivate the guys to get ready for the next one and improve on whatever you want to? Or is this a group that's pretty self-motivated?
Well, I think everybody needs a little motivation. Good teams have a lot of self-motivation, but they still need a little kick. You got to set some goals, Nick, and we set some goals Saturday morning of what we want to accomplish this week offensively and defensively, and now we're going to go out and work towards them and make sure the kids understand that these aren't easy goals because we set them pretty high this week, and we're going to have to go out, and we're going to have to execute, and we're going to have to play hard and smart and get it done. And if we do those things, I think we'll be successful.
Well, Bob, I know you got some of pre-practice rituals to go through before things get started down there. Congratulations. And tell the guys congratulations from us on RCST, and best of luck the rest of the way.
Hey, I appreciate it, David and Nick, and I appreciate all that you do for high school sports and sports in general. Thanks a bunch.
Thanks, Coach.
All right,
that is Free State. Free State head football coach Bob Lischer joining us right here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. And speaking of Coach Lischer and those Firebirds, we've got our first official athlete of the week from the city of Lawrence. We'll be sharing that with you later on in the show. We've got free lunch to give away courtesy of Zaxby's, and we're going to start our qualifying for the What's Your Number courtesy of the Kansas Speedway and those NASCAR races that are coming to Kansas City in October. So a lot to get to between now and 6 o'clock. We're going to start looking towards that KU West Virginia game, KU opening up Big 12 play against the Mountaineers this Saturday. We'll talk to the voice of the Mountaineers, Tony Caridi, coming up in the next hour. But before we do that, we got some KU football to talk about. They played in Ohio against the Bobcats. Things didn't work out according to plan. We've got DL here to break it all down for us on the other side. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
All right, it's 20 after the hour, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert with David Lawrence. We are out here with LCC, Lawrence Country Club. It's the site of the Family Promise of Lawrence Golf Tournament. We will be here till 6 o'clock. We've got a lot to get to. We'll talk to Tony Caridi, the voice of the Mountaineers, coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. But first, let's look back on that game from Saturday. KU loses to Ohio on the road. 42-30 is the final score in that one. Extends that losing streak, as David has pointed out, that only we on the outside seem to really talk or care about, to 42 games. David, I know you were up there in Athens. What were kind of your expectations going into the game, and how much of what you saw on Saturday caught you by surprise?
Well, my expectations was that Kansas was going to get a win. It's one of the reasons why I talk so much about that streak going in. I only do that when I felt strongly that we were going to be ready to get a win, and not that I overlooked Ohio. That wasn't the case at all. This was, we knew it was going to be a good team under Frank Solich, 13-year veteran, 73 years of age, and he had his guys ready. There's no question about that. And what surprised me? Well, you know, here's one thing, and I believe in our defensive coordinator, as much, if not more, than anyone, Clint Bowen. He's going to get this righted. You know, the season's in its infancy. I know a lot of people, because, you know, supposedly the non-con was an easier portion of the schedule. You know, a lot of people, I'm sure, have given up, and that's okay. I do know that we have a nucleus of really tried and true fans out there, and we appreciate you. I appreciate you, but one common denominator that we've seen, and we can kind of lump these two MAC opponent games, I think, together, because I think they're similar teams. I'll be anxious. You know, Central Michigan won last year. It's going to be a pick'em game this year. But in both of those games, you know, we made the opposing quarterback, you know, they made plays on us. And was not bothered by hits, and we actually had, what, 11 TFLs? It's in both games. We had a lot of tackles for losses. We had a lot of hits on the quarterback, but both quarterbacks, of course, this week they ran two quarterbacks, Rourke and Maxwell. They continued to make plays, you know, and, you know, we didn't take them out of their comfort zone. And we can't allow quarterbacks to have those, quote, best days at our expense. And that surprised me. You know, Peyton Bender held on to the ball too long. There's no question about that. He had good numbers, but too many negative plays. I talked about the consistency. You know, we really, even in the first game when his numbers were really good, there was 5-6 really erratic throws. And we've continued to see that. And, you know, you can't do that. You got to be consistent every time. Without question, the game turned around. There were several turning points. The second turning point was we opened the second half, and Joe DeForest, he'd worked on an onside kick all week. He told us about it, and they had executed it very well. I thought it was a reasonable risk to take because you wanted to go out and steal the momentum. We actually grabbed the momentum at the end of the half, so you still had it. And it didn't work. It was some type of an onside kick where you crossed the field, you know, with the ball and the kickoff. And thus, the defense was put in a kind of pin back to begin the second half. And the defense fought hard and gave up some yards. But when they got, you know, somewhere inside the 10, Mike Lee came over and reacted on a pass thrown by Nathan Rourke that was floated a little bit, and he intercepted it. It was our first interception of the year. And so, you know, I'm going crazy up in the booth with Brian, and we're ready to go, you know. And about three plays later, Peyton underthrew the ball to Steven Sims. It was thrown behind him, underthrown behind him about 4 or 5 feet. And Steven, in trying to reach back and catch that, tipped it up to the safety. Most of you had seen this because you probably were still into the game at this point. And boy, that was a big change of momentum right there. It just kind of sucked the juice out.
Yep.
So, you know, he's got to get better. Our offensive line, you know, still has some issues. You know, we knew it wouldn't be a finished product. You would like to think that, you know, everyone would be just a little further along than they are, but we got a long way to go.
Let me stop you right there, because one thing that I think we have a tendency to do when a team loses, or just in general when they're not playing well, we're going to look around, right, and point to everything that's not going correctly, right? Because then we can do that. We can point to deficiencies on every aspect of this team, as every team in the country can, but when you're losing, it gets magnified. So in the case of Kansas, now they've lost two straight games to MAC opponents, we're going to look at everything. We're going to look at the O-line. We're going to look at the wide receivers. We're going to look at the play calling. We're going to look at the D-line, the secondary, all of this different stuff. But if you just take a step back, and I want to know if you agree with me on this, to me, we can point to the things that Peyton Bender has done wrong and his shortcomings and this offense's shortcomings. They put up 451 yards of offense against CMU. They almost 500 yards of offense against CMU, 450 yards of offense versus Ohio. It's hard for me to look at the reasons why KU has lost these past two games and really get to the offense at all. Because I feel like this offense is playing good enough to keep KU in games. They just haven't been able to have the consistency to get those stops on defense that they need.
Well, and consistency on the offensive side of the ball. But, yes, a good point. We outgained Ohio by 1 yard, 451 to 450. We found a running back that, you know, really kind of disappeared, you know, in the preseason, yeah, or in the fall, early fall drills. Khalil Herbert, they kind of went into the year listed at one. And my guess is, by how he landed up further down the depth chart, is, you know, he didn't have some good practices, or maybe slightly banged up, or a combination of the two. But he came out and he looked good. We found out that the offensive line, even though they've given up some sacks this year, has had some protection issues, particularly on the right side. Pretty good run blockers. You know, I saw some good blocks by Chris Hughes. And I thought Zach Cannon came in, the transfer, graduate transfer from Nebraska, came in and did a good job. So there are some things, you know, to move forward upon in a conference season that, you know, the Big 12 schools, Kansas will be underdogs in at least every game except for Baylor. And, of course, that's still out there. And I think that helps Kansas. I still believe in these kids. I believe in the coaching staff. I think this is David Beatty's best coaching staff. I think this is David Beatty's best players that he's had since he's been here. I know, as disappointed as I am, and it has been tough, I know that he's got to be 10 times more than that. And these kids who've invested their entire lives, they're tremendously disappointed. They wanted no more than to bring a win back and have fun burying that losing road streak, but it didn't happen. Ohio took care of business. And another thing that kind of jumped out at me in kind of looking again at both of these last two teams, because they have so much in common. These are teams that have traditions in the MAC conference and Solich, of course, 13 years. Both of these teams, about 80% of the makeup is from their states. And, of course, Michigan and Ohio are populated states. But they're picking up kids after all the, you know, top five conferences have gone through there. And they're taking them and they're redshirting them. And that's kind of the way you do it. It's just not a fancy way. And I feel that, that David Beatty, much more than Turner and Charlie, is doing that. I can point to a number of people that you know, came here. They're finding him. I think having Gene Weir on the staff, he's located some guys like Mesa Riberty. He paid immediate dividends, started as a freshman. You know, we got him as a walk-on. We also have Ryan Shadler, came as a walk-on. And now we have two defensive ends that are on the depth chart, Marshall Moses and Vaughn Taylor, both came as walk-ons. I really like what they've accomplished there. That we, you know, we've got an outstanding athlete from Pratt, Kansas. You know, these guys would have always walked on at K-State before, and, you know, they're choosing Kansas now. And that's the way you build this program. And you play with 23-year-olds. And I know there's some exceptions there. A lot of great athletes can go out there and play and dominate games as sophomores or even freshmen. But for the most part, you go out and play with 23-year-olds, and you get some grizzly 320-pound offensive tackle, or in the case of Ohio, they had a couple that went 340, and all their offensive line was redshirt juniors or redshirt seniors. They're fourth- and fifth-year guys. And you know, I know people feel that, well, you know, in 3 years, David Beatty needs to produce more than this. And, you know, to quote Glenn Mason, you know, and I'm sure David feels this too, I mean, you would rather have fans really upset because that means they care.
Right, exactly. But there's a fine line between being disappointed and trying to throw in the towel. And I feel like some, maybe this is a generational thing, so I'm going to have to reset here. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I know that you've got better ways to spend your Friday and Saturday nights, David. I don't. So I spent much of Saturday evening engaging with people on Twitter about the state of this program, what's been accomplished over the last two-plus seasons, and where is it going. Because I was interacting with, and while I think that we sometimes think that like social media is a big indicator of how people really feel, it's not. In most cases, it's a small minority of people who feel like they're able to speak their mind because they're hiding behind a keyboard. But people were coming out of the woodworks telling me that this team just isn't making any progress. There's still a bottom feeder in the Big 12. Nothing's changing. Nothing's getting better. And I'm sitting there like an Acme anvil has just been dropped on my head by the Wile E. Coyote, because I can't understand what team people are watching if they don't think this team has made huge leaps since from where they were 2 years ago. David Beatty inherited a team that was 20 scholarships below the limit, David. 20 below the limit. And for people to think that the results are going to be exactly what they want after two seasons and three games is just laughable to me. And I agree with you 100%. It's okay to be disappointed. You should be disappointed. It means you're invested. It means you care. But just because it's not where you want to be after year three doesn't mean it's time to throw in the towel. David Beatty inherited what was likely a five-year job at best. We are 2 years in plus three games. I understand it's not where you want. Everybody understands that. It doesn't mean that they're headed in the right direction. Peyton Bender is ninth in the country in passing yards. He has attempted 146 passes through three games. He is being asked to do a lot. I understand there are things you want to see get better. But just because it's not where you want it to be doesn't mean this team hasn't improved by leaps and bounds over the past two seasons. I wish more people would understand that. I think there's a lot of people who do. I think a lot of the majority of the Kansas fan base is level-headed and understands that this is a long process. But it just infuriates me to no end when people come out of the woodworks telling me how this team's not making improvements, they need to start over again. I think that's absolutely no way to go about building a college football program.
Well said, and I did see some of your tweets when I was coming home on the plane. You know, what's the significance of Jason Rhodes being replaced by Andrew Tovey at left guard, and the fact that Kyron Johnson is running in a lot of snaps for Derek Neal on defense? You know what the significance of that is?
What is that? Two seniors?
Zero now.
Well, two seniors being replaced, yes.
Yes. So Kansas essentially is playing was zero senior starters, except for, there's one, I'm sorry, Ben Johnson. So one senior starter.
Is this the youngest Kansas team that you've ever covered?
Yeah, I can't say that. It's certainly a young one. And it's easy, you know, right up until the first week, I was thinking, well, this is a much more veteran team. And we've got so many guys that have played so many games. But we're looking at people like Hakeem Adeniji and Mesa Riberty.
As like leaders, as like the guys with experience.
Bryce Tornaden, we're looking at them as leaders. Boy, they got all this experience.
True sophomores.
That's
Mike
right.
Lee should be a freshman this year. And he's the most experienced guy in that secondary.
Yeah, so you're looking at all these guys as the veterans out there. And, in fact, these are second- and third-year guys. And they went against primarily fourth- and fifth-year guys in Athens, Ohio. So, you know, I'm not trying to pick up excuses. Kansas felt that they should win. You're in the Big 12. You need to get wins right there. And it didn't work out. But the fact is, this is not an experienced team. This is not a veteran team. We've got some guys that have played before, but they played as true freshmen. Probably not ready. They just were what we had. And, you know, in the world that everyone wants to play now and doesn't want to wait, the truly best programs out there are the ones that put people on the shelf to grow in the weight room, to go out there and practice every day and work on some drills, mature, get their school started. And then, you know, by your fourth year, you know, you're a junior, you still got 2 years. You start for 2 years. That's kind of the way things work. That's the way it worked at Nebraska with Frank Solich when he was there. And speaking of Nebraska, do you think they may have made a mistake about Frank Solich? He's too old. He's 9-3, and we got to get rid of him. Who'd they get beat by on Saturday?
Northern Illinois.
Yeah. So.
Well,
so
the impatient. Okay, but that speaks to, I think, a larger point in college athletics and sports in general. And I'm not going to say it's all happening right now, but I think in large part, every sports organization, whether it's professional or college, you know, all they want from fans, it's the only thing they want besides money. Okay, money helps, but money is a part of loyalty. They want loyalty. They want you to be there no matter what. And loyalty in sports is a mirage because people can say they're going to stick with you through thick and thin, but the reality of the situation is unless you're winning and putting a good product on the field, they're not going to come and continue to support you. So it's tough to be patient. If your team's not winning, you don't have a lot of incentive to continue to go out and to support them and to root them on and cheer for their success. But the second they do, you're going to be right back there. There's a lot of things you can point out about this team that you don't like and need to get better. But just because they're not good now doesn't mean they're not heading in the right direction. Simply looking at the win-loss column and coaches will tell you this because they have to and it's their job. If coaches come out and tell you they don't care about wins, they're going to be on the next train out of town. But I'm telling you, if you only want to view college football or sports in general, especially for a program that is in the state that Kansas football is in right now, if you only want to view that through the prism of wins and losses, I'm sorry, but you have a very, very simple view of college football and how it works. Okay, you can do that if you're Alabama. You can do that if you're an SEC program. You cannot do that if you're a fan of Kansas football and you root for a program that inherited what David Beatty inherited, that inherited a cupboard that had been completely ravaged by Charlie Weiss and you had nothing to start with. This takes time. I know we want immediate results, and we kind of led the hype train coming into this season, and if I need to take blame for that, then I will. But maybe the expectations were too high coming into this season. There is still plenty to be excited about. There is still plenty to be encouraged about this team making steps in the right direction.
25%. That's how far we are into the season. So, you know, say what you want to about being unhappy with where Kansas is at right now, having played their first three games against non-conference opponents, understand that it's 25%. I've always said this. One of the things that bothers me more than anything else is the mentality that after you find out that you can't possibly make a bowl, then you don't want to have anything to play for. I mean, that is the stupidest comment that I think I've ever heard. When these guys fight their tails off for 350 days in the year and they go through all the practices, spring ball, summer conditioning, And to think that you only have 12 opportunities to showcase it, and for anyone to shorten that season up, saying this doesn't matter because this hasn't happened yet. I mean, that's the same type of mentality as when some people, they go read the paper and find out who defeated, and they go out and buy the T-shirt for that team
right.
because they want to join that winner. I think you're kind of like I am right now. We got our backs up. We know there's people taking shots at us. We want to know who's with us, who's not with us. And if you're with us, let's go forward because these guys aren't backing down. I can tell you that. They're embarrassed. They're upset. They wanted, you know, to be 3-0 at this juncture, and it didn't happen. They're facing a West Virginia team, and we're going to talk to Tony Caridi a little bit later. But they had a 50-50 game with a ranked opponent to open up the year in Virginia Tech, and they didn't go their way. They've faced two lesser foes, and they've just pounded them. They've got a great quarterback on paper. They're going to be big underdogs. I think someone already had it somewhere around 22. So let's see how that works this week. I'm anxious. I'm ready to go. These kids are resilient. They'll be ready. They'll be practice up. I have a feeling that we're going to be healthier on Saturday than we've been the previous 2 weeks. That's always a positive thing. And these guys, they're upset. There's no question about that. I can see that on the flight back. They're embarrassed. They wanted to do better. They want to please the fans out there. They want that more than anything else. They, you know, the Texas game was the dream that's come true that they think about for every game out there. They want to have that on Saturday in the early start at Memorial Stadium.
He's David Lawrence. I'm Nick Schwartz. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk live from Lawrence Country Club. I'll be here till 6 o'clock. We've got a Zaxby's giveaway, a couple of them, as a matter of fact, and we start our qualifying for the What's Your Number with the Kansas Speedway for those NASCAR races coming to town in October. All that and more before 6 o'clock on the other side. Let's do a little Big 12 whip around and tell you everything that happened across the conference this past week. And it's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
You already knew that Rock Chalk Sports Talk covers KU sports like no other radio show in the show. So, how could it get even better, you ask? By adding a guy who eats, sleeps, and breathes KU, David Lawrence. DL and Nick Schwert on Rock Chalk Sports Talk every Monday from 4 to 6 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Quarter after 4 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN with David Lawrence. I'm Nick Schwert. We're out here live at Lawrence Country Club for the Family Promise of Lawrence Golf Tournament. What did Free State head football coach Bob Lischer say at the very beginning of the show? I said, Coach, how do you get past that big win and get ready for next week? He said, we put that one to bed on Saturday morning. So this is our attempt to put KU's loss to Ohio to bed and start looking towards their Big 12 opener against West Virginia on Saturday, David.
Oh, yes, and Tony Caridi is going to get us ready for Mountaineer football. They'll be coming to town and playing very early in the day on Saturday at 2-1. A big game against Virginia Tech could have gone either way, and they've been blowing away opponents ever since Tony joins us now. Tony Caridi, how are you, sir?
I am wonderful, David. Good to hear your voice, buddy. How you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Looking forward to seeing you. I'm guessing you're coming to Overland Park and not Lawrence on Friday night?
Yeah, we're exactly. We're staying at the same team hotel that we use for the Big 12 basketball tournament.
Okay. Well, I look forward to seeing you early on Saturday. Okay, I'll give you a wake-up call. Talk to us about, you know, some of the expectations that you had coming into this year, and then, you know, how are you answering it? You lost some pretty good players, a couple of excellent receivers, last name of White, one of my favorite guys, the wide receivers, the Gibsons and Shorts is the ones you lost. Orlovsky,
right.
One of my favorite offensive linemen in the entire Big 12, you lost him, but you got a pretty special quarterback that transferred in here. What do you think so far?
Well, so far, I thought, to be quite honest with you, David, that the expectations for the quarterback, Will Grier, who transferred in from Florida, I thought they were going to be unobtainable, because you know how people always get so giddy about the player that they've never seen play, and you know the backup quarterback is always the guy everyone wants to see. And so I thought expectations were probably too high for Will Grier to start the season, but you know what? He has delivered. From that opening game on, he's thrown for 300-plus yards in each of his first three games. So far this season, he's thrown for 1,000 yards, 1,027 yards, 11 touchdown passes and two picks. So far, he's completing just a hair under 66% of his passes. And so he's done a wonderful job. I mean, he's a big boy quarterback. We saw that when he was at Florida, when he was 6-0 there, including some big road wins. And he's the real deal. Running back position, there's really three of them that they totally are comfortable in using. Justin Crawford was the Big 12's newcomer of the year a season ago. He was 6th in the country, averaged 7 yards per carry a year ago. And there's a kid named Kennedy McCoy, true sophomore, and a true sophomore by the name of Martel Petaway. And those guys, McCoy and Petaway, they have no hesitation in using them. You mentioned at the receiver spot, we did lose two really good ones, but there's three kids that are really his favorite targets. David Sills was the young guy, if you remember, that committed to Lane Kiffin when he was in 8th grade as a quarterback. Yes. He came here as a quarterback. They moved him to receiver. He was good at receiver. In fact, game-winning touchdown pass a couple years ago in the Cactus Bowl, but still wanted to be a quarterback. Left, went JC last year out in California to be a QB. Didn't get the interest that he wanted. Came back here, totally committed to be a wide receiver, and he's been fantastic. He's caught 5 touchdown passes in the first 3 games. He's caught 18 balls already. Another kid by the name of Gary Jennings, who you may remember from last year. He's talented. He's got 23 catches already. Yes. And Kevin White's brother, Karan's got 14 receptions and 2 touchdowns. So they're good there. Defensively, very much a work in progress. For the second straight year, they are trying basically to replace 80% of the defense. A year ago, they were able to do it. This year, they're trying to replace 9 starters, plus our best disruptor defensively. David Long is a kid who's out probably until the first weekend of October with a knee injury. So very much piecemeal on defense at this point, rotating literally 9 and 10 guys on the defensive front among those 3 spots. And corners to this point have not established themselves.
Hey Tony, Nick Schwert here. Good to talk to you again, man. I'm sure after that first week loss to Virginia Tech, you guys are kind of sitting there thinking, okay, well, we can't change that, but now you just kind of got to move ahead and get ready for Big 12 play. And you guys have certainly done that, taking care of business against ECU and Delaware State this past week. And so, judging off of what you guys were thinking and what the mindset was after that week one loss, have they accomplished about as much as you guys could have hoped for in these past 2 weeks?
I think the perfect situation was that they were going to win their first 3 games. I think that's what everyone was hoping for. And in that Tech game, like you said, you can't change it. But they literally had a pass dropped in the end zone, which would have tied it on the final possession to send the thing into overtime. So people are still biting their lip over that one. But to this point, you know, they put 56 up against East Carolina, 49 of those in the first half. And then last week, just the game, they were literally favored by 60. Same type of a deal. They won at 59-16. And so I think at this point, probably as good as they could be based on the Tech loss. And now the question becomes, you know, when you step into league play, everything's really, you know, really matters now. And I think that focus-wise, this is kind of where they thought they would be. And now the question is, how much will they improve as the season goes along?
Tony Caridi, the voice of the Mountaineers, joins us. The Mountaineers will play Kansas at 11 a.m. Central Time on Saturday. Let's talk about the Big 12 a little bit. It's hard to argue that Oklahoma and Oklahoma State aren't the top 2 teams, but there's a nucleus of teams in the middle, and I think you're one of 4 of those. And I think Texas, by way of its impressive loss, worked its way back into that pack in the middle with TCU, West Virginia, K-State, and TCU that has a shot at sneaking up on anybody in this conference. But anything that's jumped out at you early on in the conference?
No, I think you hit it right on. I was surprised that Texas did as well as it did, despite the fact that it lost based upon what had happened to them earlier. I was surprised that Kansas State lost at Vanderbilt. You know, those are the kind of games, those aren't good losses for the league. You know, if you're saying Kansas State's going to be your third best team in the league, some do, that they were a dark horse, don't lose to Vanderbilt. And I think that, you know, those are the kind of things that hurt. When you look at the Baylor situation, I don't think people realized how bad they got gutted on their depth chart. The attrition that took place when all of the controversy and the turmoil took place there, they are obviously, very much an entirely different look from what they used to be. So I think those are probably the biggest things at this point. And, you know, Baker Mayfield and Mason Rudolph probably, we all knew that they were going to have great years, and now they're exceeding those expectations. I mean, the folks in Morgantown were giddy in the stands on Saturday when they kept flashing the Pitt Oklahoma State score up there. You know, as much as they love a West Virginia win, they love a Pitt loss. And when they saw Oklahoma State rolling up those points, they were thoroughly enjoying that. But I think you are right. I think that after Oklahoma and Oklahoma State at this point, that it's an absolute jumble for the other spots.
And I know Danny Holgorsen is going to be talking a lot about the win Kansas got about, what was it, 5 years ago at home? Because certainly, you know, showing tape of the MAC losses that Kansas has had, he has to be fearing being set up again, similar to what it was in the year that they came in here, as, you know, Kansas has not had those victories like many other teams that are going to catch the attention of these 19 and 20-year-olds.
Yeah, I think they'll be focused because they totally weren't last week against Delaware State. And I think the big selling point this week is going to be the fact that it's a league game and there are no mulligans in league play. And if, in fact, you are going to, you know, be an upper echelon team, you better win the games that you're supposed to win. And I think for as long as Dana Holgorsen coaches at West Virginia, he will always bring up, you know, the games that they have lost that you know, on paper they should not have lost. And in that particular case, you know, that was the case. They just, my gosh, was that a miserable day all the way around. And so I think he'll always have that one in his mind.
We're talking to the voice of the Mountaineers, Tony Caridi, here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We've been talking until we're blue in the face about Kansas football, what our expectations were, how they've kind of lived up to them or haven't lived up to them this season. So I'm curious to get your take, Coney, from the outside looking in. I know we talked this summer about KU and kind of your thoughts on them, but how would you kind of assess what you expected to see from this team through 3 weeks and the team that you guys are getting ready to face this Saturday?
Well, I mean, I'm sure, you know, especially at the start of a season, you have this great, everyone has great optimism at the start of the season. So when you lose two of your first three games, it hurts. There's no fun in that. I do know that Doug Meacham is a really good offensive coordinator. And you take a look at your last 2 weeks, you scored 27 and you scored 30. In the first week, you scored 38. So I think, you know, you've got things to build on there. And I know you've got hit with some injuries already at this point in the season. It's hard, man. I mean, the hardest thing to do is build in college football. Basketball, now you guys don't know about this, but actually people do rebuild in basketball. You guys just reload. But football is a hard deal, man. It takes time. It takes time. You know, we look through the years at one of our old rivals. We mentioned Virginia Tech earlier. I mean, people have no idea how close they were to firing Frank Beamer after about five seasons there. And David, I don't know if you remember this, but I mean, it was like no forward progress, no progress, no progress. And they finally just hung with them one more year and boom, it hit. And seven wins became eight wins. And then it rolled from there. So you've got to let these guys get their program established. You got to let them go through a cycle of their own kids before you can really make a determination as to where you are. And I think that there's no fun. It's a slow process. And no one, especially nowadays, likes slow.
Case in point, Frank Solich, and then we kind of joked earlier in the show that maybe Nebraska is having some second thoughts about firing their former fullback and what he's been able to do as far as solidify an Ohio program that probably has about 2% of the budget they have up there in Lincoln, Nebraska. But nevertheless, another question about your quarterback. And, you know, does Greer have a chance to maybe surpass everyone in what he's able to do in throwing down the field? I know he probably hasn't had as many snaps the last 2 weeks as what he's going to get in Big 12 play.
He can throw it, David. I mean, he can absolutely straight out throw it. Now, we did not have a kid named Marcus Sims, who I haven't mentioned, in our first game. He was suspended for a game, and he's the fastest guy on the team. And in the two games that he's returned, he's caught five for 143 yards and three touchdowns. And in each of the last two games, he got hit long with bombs. Plus, he's helped our return game. He had an 80-yard kickoff return on Saturday. So he can stroke it. He's got that weapon out there. I mean, he can make every throw. He literally can make any throw you want. He can make that throw. He's a heady kid. He's the son of a coach. You know, they think he's a pro. Jake Spavital is our offensive coordinator. He was with us when we had Geno. Then he went to A&M and he had Johnny Manziel. Then he went to Cal and he had Davis Webb. And before that, he was with Dana at Houston with Case Keenum and Whedon at Oklahoma State. So he's had, what, five already in the NFL, and he says this kid is number six. So he's a really good quarterback. There's no question about it.
So you're saying there's a chance.
Got a chance. He's got a
Tony,
chance.
Tony, thanks so much. I look forward to visiting with you on your network radio show tomorrow night, and look forward to seeing you on Saturday. All the best, my man. You're a good friend.
Thanks, here, man. I appreciated you guys very much, and we look forward to getting out there to Lawrence on Saturday.
Thanks, Tony.
Tony Caridi, the voice of the Mountaineers, who, you know, speaking of programs like we've talked about with Solich at Ohio, I mean, I think that's exactly what Holgorsen has done at West Virginia. They, you know, they seem to come up with similar parts. They are always so fast outside the receiver position. And then they graduate, and then the next year they're so fast out there at the wide receiver position. I mean, they've always got some nasty dude playing that fullback H-back that you just don't want to be around. And then, you know, the Olasky was one of my favorite offensive linemen a year ago. I'm sure they've got more of those guys against stability and consistency and recruiting. And not only that, the assistant coaches. Now, every good program is going to lose assistant coaches, and certainly Holgorsen has. But he keeps most of them every year, and he pieces in people that will fit with the ones that he has, and they do the same thing that they've been doing successful for the past, you know, umpteen years that he has been there. And that's why West Virginia, not tab number one or two, but has a shot at number three, and that's just wide open. I think it's a tough team. I saw them versus Virginia Tech, and like Tony said, they had a chance to tie it, go to overtime at the end. It was one of those 50-50 games that was played at a neutral site. However, Virginia Tech had way more people there, so it wasn't truly neutral. I think it was in D.C. And since then, you would like the schedule to work out differently, you know, where you build up instead of having that big game at the very beginning and then you jump down a couple of levels, but that hasn't been the case for them.
He's David Lawrence. I am Nick Schwert. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. So I've gotten David to answer my pressing questions about KU football. Up next, we're going to see if he can answer your questions. It's the mailbag with DL coming up on the other side on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
What up, NASCAR fans? The Kansas Speedway has got your number. See your driver live on October the 22nd. Be listening. Coming up later on in the 5 o'clock hour to win tickets to the Monster Energy NASCAR Cup Series Hollywood Casino 400. With the What's Your Number giveaway brought to you by the Kansas Speedway. It is 20 till 5 right here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. David Lawrence and myself are live from Lawrence Country Club, the site of the Family Promise of Lawrence Golf Tournament. I'll be here till 6 o'clock. David's been answering my pressing questions all show long about Kansas football, where they've been, where they're heading, but it's time to answer your questions. David is put on the hot seat. as we open up the mailbag and see what it has in store today. First question, David. I obviously was a bit down after the team's loss to Central Michigan, but I was impressed with running back Don Williams. I can't remember us having a workhorse since the days of James Sims, and this Williams guy looks like he can be a big-time player for us as he is still young. Knowing we have him and some other options, including Khalil Herbert, should we be running the ball more to protect our quarterback and keep the defense off the field? Tim.
Well, Tim, it's the air raid offense, so you're not going to change that, not at this juncture. And you know, I'm a big believer in Doug Meacham and what he's able to do. But, you know, a lot of passing offenses will run it half of the time. What they do is they just run more plays, like we ran against Central Michigan. I mean, we ran about as many plays against Central Michigan. I think it was, 92? That back in the old days, that was about two games. So... You're gonna pass a lot, but you're gonna run a lot as well. You know, I think these running backs are talented. Khalil Herbert certainly has put his foot in. Taylor Martin has been banged up. Dom Williams is a young talent, and I like the walk-on kid, Daron Thompson. It's gonna come down to how many times you're gonna fumble, and how are you gonna block on third and long, and you got to pick up a blitz, and that's, you know, how they're gonna make their mark. I think Kansas will run the football. I do think that we saw some of the youngsters on the right side, you know, is more inexperienced than the left side of our offensive line. And notably, Chris Hughes, I saw him get up on a linebacker in the big run by Khalil Herbert, and he looked impressive. So I'm encouraged about the run blocking at the offensive line. So we will run the ball. We'll continue to run the ball a lot right now. You know, our quarterback's not a big runner, so he's not going to factor in the running game. If we put in Carter Stanley, however, that would change. You would see a lot more quarterback draws, quarterback powers that you use when people like Carter are in the game.
All right, next up, DL, season ticket holder here. I was so excited for this season, and then boom, we lose by multiple scores to Ohio and Central Michigan. I still have hope that Beatty can get us where we want to go in a few years, but I'd be lying if I wasn't disappointed for this year. I'm still going to the game this weekend against West Virginia, and am hoping we catch them off guard with an 11 a.m. start. How do you think we fare against the Mountaineers, Jeff?
Jeff, great question. I mean, I think I saw on the paper 22-point underdogs. So here you go. That's where it starts out at. There's going to be a different kind of pressure. All of it is on the Mountaineers in this one. So far, I think the thing that jumps out at all of us, people like myself have been talking about, this is our best coaching staff of the David Beatty era. This is the best personnel that we've had since David Beatty arrived. So far, we're not seeing on paper, you know, that best team. And I think, you know, that could show up this week. It's going to be a different kind of pressure. Everyone's going to think Kansas is going to fall flat on their faces to a team that's loaded up, has an NFL-type quarterback, some extreme speed on the outside, and one of those top 25, top 30 teams in West Virginia. So I think this is a great opportunity for Kansas to have its best showing without the same kind of pressure. MAC teams, and you know, granted, Kansas should have won against MAC teams. Going forward, they need to win these games. Obviously, other teams have fallen to MAC foes. Oklahoma State last year, now Oklahoma State, that is going to be perhaps, you know, being looked at as being included in the Final Four. But MAC teams, and they always have a tremendous edge when they go against Big 12 Power 5 teams. So you got to be ready. They're going to have their best game against you, most motivated game against you, and Kansas has received that from Central Michigan and Ohio, who took care of business against us. And congratulations to them. Kansas has another opportunity. I look forward to seeing what they can do, maybe in a different kind of a matchup where you don't have pressure on you because you're the Power 5 team.
You kind of just slipped this in there, but just for clarification, do you think there's less pressure on this team now after those two losses, or does the pressure intensify?
I think on the team, the much less pressure.
Because nobody's expecting anything from them?
No one's expecting it. Yeah, it's going to be forgotten about. And, you know, you talked about, you know, your Twitter arguments that you've had. You know, there's that group out there that's going to be love to take shots at Kansas. So, yeah, a better chance to get your back up and come out fighting like that mean Jayhawk you've been wearing on the side of your helmet. That's got to be our mentality from this day forward. And, you know, on paper, West Virginia is a better team, but I do think this is a better Kansas team, certainly, and we haven't necessarily really seen that in the first two games. So Tony Creedy thinks that West Virginia will certainly be up for this game. Let's just see on Saturday. Sometimes it's a tough one when you come, you know, from West Virginia, come out here and play at 11. I guess it'll be noon their time.
All right, our next question is from Nick Schwert, the man sitting about 16 inches away from your face right now, staring directly into your eyes. What would it take for KU to just completely go back to the old school Mean Jayhawk as their number one logo? Mm. I would be a proponent of it big time.
Number one mascot?
Yeah.
Well,
you're pretty much asking.
Obviously, football would I rather kind of adopted
the,
it.
You're asking whether I would rather the mascot be angry or happy, and I would rather the mascot be angry.
Yeah, it's always been my favorite. You know,
I think it's most people's favorite.
You know, 1941. I've told the story. I don't know. I can't speak for the people that made the decision. It has to be based on the bombing of Pearl Harbor in 1941, and why you're so angry because someone had that low cut, unannounced move that destroyed most of your Navy and killed a large percentage of the people that were in the service over in Hawaii. So, yeah, you're upset. So that's why they came out with that. And that's kind of that's got to be the mentality of Kansas football moving forward. So I think they've kind of adopted it.
Football certainly has, yeah.
Yes.
Because you don't want, because football, basketball is a little different. Like football, you don't want a smiling Jayhawk, you know, on that side of that helmet. You want an angry Jayhawk. You want something that is going to instill fear into the hearts of your opponents. And so far, I guess the jury's still out on that one. This is the Mailbag with David Lawrence. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Next question. David, as an offensive line aficionado, I'm curious what your thoughts of the O-line has been so far. We're averaging more points than we have in a while, but there have been some lapses. Also to that note, what on earth happened on that play with all the cut blocks where Bender had three green jerseys in his face? George.
I'm not sure. That was a good question, George, exactly what the play is, but it was cut blocks that came out there that it didn't come off like it should have. I don't know exactly what they were trying to do because it didn't finish off, so I haven't seen them work on that, but there are certain plays. When you cut block, you want their hands down, right? So you come after their lower or middle lower parts, so they'll certainly have their hands down, and the quarterback can have a vision over the middle. But great athletes playing on the defensive line, and, you know, Ohio has them, West Virginia has them, you know, they're just going to put their hand on top of your shoulder, throw you down, and hop over it because athletically they can do that. So sometimes it doesn't work out, and it does take you away from what you do 99% of the time, and that's probably why it didn't look as good to some, because it's a little bit of fish out of water. They haven't really worked on that type of a block. But, you know, getting back to the offensive line, you know, we didn't have two new starters. We had one new starter, and Andrew Tovey, a transfer originally out of Hawaii, he took the place of a senior, which, you know, kind of had me a little bit surprised. But it shows you a lot about what they feel about Tovey taking the place of Jason Rhodes, our most experienced offensive lineman. And then Antoine Frazier, I think he played a series, and I believe there was a defensive end that got his hands on a quarterback, so he came out and replaced him with a senior. So that guess would be another senior coming up to start if Zach Hannon will do that. So there's been some replacements, and I know a lot of people are wondering about Charles Baldwin, the five-star recruit out of Connecticut that went to Alabama. And I thought David Beatty kind of phrased that well last time. He says, it's about time we get over the Alabama thing.
Right.
You know, just because you go to Alabama doesn't mean anything. You know, I mean, it means at one time you were cited by someone to having a lot of talent. So, you know, if Baldwin's not in the depth chart, we need to forget about him, move forward with who we have. And that is Zach Cannon and Antoine Frazier at right tackle.
Up next, Mr. Lawrence. I was ready to run through a wall when football season first started, but now I couldn't even run through water after the crap I've seen these last 2 weeks. I get that this team was in a bad spot and needs time to get better, but come on, we just lost by a combined 30 points to MAC schools. That part was in all caps. What would our record be in the MAC even? Like 4-8? I've given up just like the hair on your head. Okay, that's a low blow. Give me something to inspire me again.
Wow.
Brent, you expect him to answer your question after taking a low blow like that?
Well, you know, Brent, going back to what we talked about earlier, if you care, you're upset right now.
Right, that's a good thing.
You're not happy. That's a good thing. Apathy. You know, people that just start, and, you know, everyone loves the joke that's been said for every year that Kansas football isn't good. They say, when's late night? Okay, so, you know, I like the people that are upset. You know, why aren't we doing this? Why, you know, David Lawrence said this, that we're going to be much better. Why isn't it showing? I get that because you're right. I forecasted better things for this football team, and right now they're not happening. So, you know, I get that you're upset. You know, you can't, I know, because they're MAC teams, we're Power 5, you immediately say, you've got to beat these teams. But I'm telling you, because you are the Power 5 team, you're their biggest game on their schedule. Those are excuses, but it is also reality. MAC schools, they play right up there with Big 12 schools, and again, Central Michigan actually beat Oklahoma State, and you can go through and through every one of those schools in the MAC. Have had some big time wins. I remember going to Toledo and playing them, at the Rockets, I believe, and we lost with a pretty good Glenn Mason team back in the early 90s. So these schools are tough. I forecasted better, but remember, 25% is 25%.
That's right. He's David Lawrence. That is your mailbag on a Monday afternoon with DL. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We're out here at LCC for the Family Promise of Lawrence Golf Tournament. We've got a special guest who's going to be joining us coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. David's going to be taking off in just a couple of minutes. We'll take a quick break, get his final thoughts before he departs. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.